Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Chicago pizza to my Chinese dog food, it's Dan. How you doing this evening, Dan?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm fighting off a cold that I've had for the last 5 days, because, you know, what else would happen in the middle of summer? But other than that, I'm doing pretty solid. How's it going over there for you?
Well, I don't envy you having a summer cold. I hate summer colds far more than winter colds. It just, because when you have a cold in the winter, it seems like everybody's sick. So you feel like, you know, we're all in the same boat together. Summer colds, you're like, you're feeling miserable, your nose and everything, and it's warm out and you just want to go out and be a kid again and play, and meanwhile you're sick. So I hate summer colds.
Yeah, I try to stay positive and just like, well, you know, I'm building up some antibodies, so maybe when I'm older I'll be, you know, healthy instead of sick sometime when I want to go on a trip or something. So, but still, you know, I apologize in advance for my hacking, coughing, sniffling nonsense, because I got pretty much all of it going on right now. And hopefully I can keep it together for an hour.
Or muffle the phone or microphone if need be. All right. Well, I'm glad you said that from the outset. So I promise not to act with any consternation at any undue sniffling or snuffling during the podcast, unless I make you cry or something. I don't know.
I'll give you like, yeah, you can still have some meal, but I'll just give you like half a dozen times. You can have some free ones. So.
Okay. Anyway, as far as I'm concerned, it's been rather hot here in New York. We're finally getting these, again, we're in the 90 degree plus days of summer, and when you're in a large urban sprawl like New York City, it gets that much worse because of the humidity, and there's so many people, and everything from the subways and whatever. I'm always amazed by how many people love the summer all year. They're like, oh, I can't wait for the summer. I'm like, really? I kind of hate the summer here sometimes, but
summer is my least favorite holiday, least favorite season too. It just brings the mosquitoes and the wood ticks, and it kind of makes it so I can't spend as much time in the woods as I'd like. But fortunately, I live in Wisconsin, and winter's like 7 months long. Summer's pretty short, so I don't have to suffer too long.
All right, you guys have like the Game of Thrones style winters there.
Yes.
So when we're whining about like, you know, 4 inches of snow, you're like, yeah, it. During this conversation, we just got 4 inches of snow here in Wisconsin. Shut up. But as lovely as it is to talk about weather, I guess we're actually here to talk about Hannibal and the latest episode, which was And the Beast from the Sea was the title, right? That was the title.
Yes, sir.
And I know you just watched it a few moments ago, so... you may be able to correct me on anything I have screwed up based on, I took really a lot of shorthand in my notes here. I mean, not scratches, because it's obviously typed up, but I can't make heads or tails of some of the things I wrote, so I may need you to jump in from time to time. But
exciting episode as Hannibal goes, so sometimes it's hard to focus and taking notes when just like, you know, bam, 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 stuff's happening.
Right, absolutely. And it has definitely, again, been a bit more of a cohesive storyline and thread as opposed to the way it was in the first part of the season. That doesn't mean it doesn't still bend your head a little bit from time to time. It certainly does.
And it really feels like the first half of the season was a long, long-ass time ago, doesn't it?
It just seems like a different series to a certain extent, because... this now feels to a slightly more like a return to the first two seasons. But yeah, they definitely, when they jumped ahead 3 years, it almost feels like that first half of the season was 3 years ago. So I know what you're saying. All right, so let's get to it. So when the episode opened, I actually got a little confused, because you know how the episodes open and they show some scenes from the previous episode and then they start the new episode. And I was very unclear about where the clips from the last episode ended, like the previously on Hannibal part, and where the new episode began. But because apparently the new episode actually begins with footage from last week's episode, which is the images of Francis Dolarhyde chewing up the painting, because that's actually part of this episode. I know it's not really that important to anyone else, but I got confused by it.
Yeah, for a second I thought maybe they were gonna like reshow that whole first scene or that end scene from the last one where from Dollar Hyde's perspective of Will showing up, but I guess they didn't do that. I mean, it's the kind of thing they've done before and they tend to do
Right.
it well, but this worked.
Yeah, I mean, they cut to the chase, and we really are beginning with a scene with Will, Jack, and Alana Bloom. And I like that Will, a lot of times in this episode, he's kind of pissed off. I like Will with a little bit of anger in him. Because then he's more focused, as opposed to the Will that we'd seen, I hate to keep bringing it up, in the first part of the season, or at times in the first two seasons. He's basically, even though I know they know the story already, he's again relaying what happened, that he ate a painting. He ate it up, which, by the way, that was the hashtag for Hannibal that night, that Brian Fuller and other people put out there. So every tweet about Hannibal had to have the hashtag ate it up. Oh boy. So.
My mind's cloudy. I don't know what the hell I was gonna say. Just
It's okay.
talking, maybe I'll remember.
It'll come to you, I'm sure. So it's an interesting scene because you can see that Will is kind of a little bit pissed off at Jack Crawford during the whole scene.
Oh yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I mean, obviously he's mad at Jack some, but it seems like he's taken a little bit of personal responsibility. So instead of saying the same old like, oh yeah, rope me back in, Jack, blah blah blah, he's just like, I did it again, whatever. Just so it's fair, but they don't make a big deal about it, and I kind of appreciated that.
Although he does have that great line in here where he says out loud, "Jack Crawford, fisher of men, watching my cork move against the current. You got me again." I'm always gratified that characters on this show, particularly Will and Hannibal. And Hannibal you expect it from, because quite frankly, we know that Hannibal is pretty much an elitist intellectual, so he's of course going to be quoting things all the time. I think he quotes something in almost every episode, quite frankly. But the fact that Will can also be so imaginatively descriptive in a way, and there's a moment actually Jack Crawford has later in the episode where I remember thinking, I don't know if any human being has ever used that phrase before, at least out loud, but I'm willing to accept it because it's this series. When I get to that line, you'll know the one I mean, I'm sure. But during this scene, it's kind of interesting that Jack says that he's referring to Dollarhyde, that he would have been better off killing her, the museum docent, the woman that was showing him the painting, and Will. Now, I was trying to figure out, does he mean because he would be identified? And I kept wondering, wait. There's no cameras at the Brooklyn Museum? I don't think that's true. I'm going to tell you right now, the Brooklyn Museum is not it's a major museum. It's a big deal. I guarantee you there are cameras there, especially up front, especially in their vaults. So again, I know I'll let it go, but it kind of bothered me a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder that too. But they didn't really. I mean, did they even talk much about his appearance at all? I mean, I don't remember Will saying anything about him having a, facial disfigurement or anything.
No, he just basically says that he saw him, but they never go any past that. So, I mean, let's give them a little bit of credit for not taking us down some of the obvious paths that most shows would have went. At some
Right.
point, we would have seen a sketch, where there would have. I'm actually surprised there wasn't one at some point, but we didn't get that. I'm glad we didn't get that. I didn't need to see that. It's fine. But they also answer a question I had last week. I like that every episode, whether it be the next scene or the next episode, they will continuously answer questions that I have because I keep finding little problems I have, and oh, they fixed it for me. Remember last week I was wondering, why did Will go to the museum? Why does he need to see the painting? No, he says here, Hannibal told me where to find him. So even if we didn't see it on screen or we didn't or I didn't take it that way, he took his conversation with Hannibal as directing him to go to that museum. So, okay, I accept that. That makes sense now.
Man, it's regrettable that didn't have Brian Fuller right at the last season of Lost, because man, that would have made a lot more.
Oh, no. But then Will, who I will say seems to veer back and forth during this episode and as well as previous ones as, will you really smart? Will you not so smart? or he jumps to conclusions which make perfect sense, and I was like, and he's on the right path, or he's not quite right. And here he says that Lecter knows, that he knows who he is, that he probably treated him. Well, that's not exactly correct. Although, when we go to the next scene, in a way, we see that sort of kind of Lecter is kind of treating him now, you know, even if he doesn't know who he is as of yet. Because the next scene is between, again, we get a scene between Lecter and Francis Dalaride. So, and it's, I guess, what we call like an imagined discussion is happening, but the surroundings are imagined. It's either, like last time, the impression was, this is what's going on inside Francis Dalaride's head and how he's imagining this conversation. This time, my impression is, this is more Lecter's mind at work. Because, whereas, remember last time when they were talking, there was two Francis Dalarides in the scene? This time, we sort of kind of get two Lecters.
Right.
Which I thought was so brilliant.
Yeah, it's just good, you know, when you just sit there and think about how, you know, what's the level that they're going on, it works nicely.
Oh, yeah, and they give you little hints and everything. Like, when this scene opens up, first of all, they do some really interesting artsy transition. One of the few little artsy things they still threw into the episode with lights and opening up the frame into the next scene. And when the scene opens up, it opens on a close-up of a phone, and then it goes into the scene of them talking in their little therapy session in Lecter's office. But the fact that it's focusing on a phone is almost kind of like a subliminal reminder, like, what we're watching, it's really just a phone conversation, but we're watching as though they were sitting in the same room together. So back to this conversation, and this kind of goes to what you were talking about last week, because at this point, it is, I would say, it's crystal clear. There is no doubting it, that Lecter is just trying to manipulate Dalaride. That it's, forget whether he thought of him being in an admiring way or whatever. No, he's using him for his own ends, and you know that which is what Lecter does with everybody, including Will. So it only makes sense, you know, when I think about it.
Yeah.
During that scene, it's also the first time we're seeing that Dalaride, he's experiencing, I guess, fear and possibly even resentment, and this is all about the splitting of his nature, his split personality, quite frankly, because he says something along the lines of how he and the dragon, they had shared the same will before, but everything changed once he met Reba, and that's where he's been kind of like almost been in opposition to the dragon. So he's saying that this creature inside the dragon is screaming for her to be sacrificed to him. But for the first time, he doesn't want to give in. And this is where I realized what a bastard Lecter is. Actually, I didn't realize it. I knew that. Because Lecter just very gently suggests a substitute. And I loved what they do. Instead of just having Lecter in the chair, suddenly Lecter's right next to him, like almost whispering in his ear. Like the devil on his shoulder kind of a thing. And when he suggests a substitute, first, Dalaride thinks he's just talking about Will Graham, but Lecter's like, no, Will has a family. And then when we get to when the conversation is over, at this point we've stripped away, whether it's the imagination of Francis or the memory palace of Lecter, and we see it's just Hannibal on the phone, that is the point where we hear him say, you know, to kill them all. And I was like, wow. And
yeah, it seems like a long time ago, just a couple weeks ago, and, you know, trying to wonder, like, man, why would Hannibal even do this kind of stuff? It's like, okay, he's obviously going to do it.
Right, and one can imagine that there's a little bit of a... It's almost like a jealous ex-girlfriend. I mean, I do believe that is what they're going for to a certain extent. It's, you know, so there is a little bit of jealousy or pettiness to Hannibal's actions, you know, by removing Will's family from the equation, and even Will himself, if he happens to be around, I guess. So when we came back from commercial after the lovely credits, oh, by the way, this has nothing to do with anything, but you know, we're focusing on like the ocean and then there's the moon, whatever. I didn't even care about that crap. Because when I saw that both Abrams and Thompson were going to be in this episode, I was kind of happy. Although it turned out their time in the episode is very brief, so it really meant nothing. But we see that Dolarhyde is in the woods. And initially, we're not sure if this is in the present or if it's in the past. We do see later this is happening now. This is him stalking Will's house. And then we see him, you know, shortly thereafter in his attic. And, well, I think last time we saw him growing the tail. This time they went full out with the CGI. They gave him wings and a tail. So he's truly showing his transformation, I guess. It's striking. I'll give him that. So later on, he's with Reba and he tells her, you know, that he needs to work on a film. Now, when he first says this, again, I didn't realize he was outside Will's house earlier. It didn't click in my head, even though now looking back, it's pretty obvious. So when he tells her he needs to work on a film, my first thought was, oh, God, is he going to be sitting there watching one of his own homemade six slasher films while she's laying there?
Yeah, that was the same thought that I had until the chicken dogs.
Right, and then we realize, oh, it's actually Will's family. And, yeah, the dogs. Because when I saw the dogs, I was like, oh, wait a minute. What does he do to the pets? Oh, no. They're not going to go there. No. Don't do that. And then the next scene is actually in a veterinarian's office, and we see Molly and her son, Wally. I guess they call him Wally a lot. Someone said Wally. That apparently the dogs were poisoned. Huh. I love the fact that the possible reason that they came was that she had gotten Chinese dog food. Well, I guess there were canned dog food that was actually packaged in China that happened to be poisoned. Whatever. We know that's not what really is at work here. And then we get one of those first scenes in the series where we go, no, you shouldn't do that. It was like the classic horror movie thing where, no. Don't keep a secret. Don't do that. And we've talked about this on other TV shows. You know how easy things would be if people just didn't keep secrets from each other? And then we see Molly being, you know, a great mom with a really not such a great line, actually, for a show like Hannibal, where she doesn't – because she's trying to tell her son to keep the secret from Will, and he thinks it's lying. It's like, well, it's not lying if you keep your mouth shut. It's like, hey, good mom. But this is also the first point in the episode where I went, wait a minute. I don't remember this in the book. So I did the old pause thing. Oh, I should mention at this point, there are going to be a few instances during our podcast where I am going to make references to both the book and maybe even the movies, but more likely the book than anything else. I don't regard them as spoilers for the TV series since we don't know if they're going to happen or not, but it is something to be aware of. It's more likely to be things I don't think they're going to be doing on the TV series at this point.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll pretty much be spoiling the endings of the everything except the TV series. So
right, because there's no way we would know. Because the thing I'd want to point out in the book is pretty early on, Will catches on that his family might be in danger, and he actually has them relocated to a farm. That's where Crawford's brother actually lives or something. Although a lot of the conversations we see between Molly and Will and Molly and his son, which are transposed to a different set of circumstances in this episode, are still taken from the book. They're conversations Will has with them as they're about to leave to go to that farm. Instead, we see them used here in the hospital later on in the episode. Anyway, perfect. An unintended segue, in a way, because with the next scene being between Will and Hannibal, we get one of the most amusing nods to the books that they've done in the series so far. When Will is questioning, or Will is bringing up, has to have been some contact between Hannibal and the killer, the great red dragon, the tooth fairy murderer, whatever they want to call him. And Hannibal, questions, how could this be possible? He's like, how do you think this happened? Through personal ads or notes of admiration on toilet paper? So for anyone who hasn't read the books, those are the two ways that Hannibal and Francis Dalryde communicate with each other in the books, through personal ads and through notes that were written on toilet paper. that very first note, the first conversation between Lecter and Dalryde that we saw on the series, on the phone, that was actually a note that was written on toilet paper and sent to him in the book. So they are being kind of cheeky here, obviously. But during the scene, Hannibal does tell the truth that he doesn't know who he is, but he does know the family. He does pretty much indicate he knows who the family is that's going to be the next victim. And this is where, remember I was talking about Will being smart, Will being not so smart sometimes? I'm sorry. When Hannibal says to you, he's talking about this, and when he goes to the extent of saying, I'm not letting them die, you are, considering all their connections and everything else, this is the point where Will should immediately be assuming his family might be in danger. I was really surprised by that. I mean, hey, aside to a crappy TV show we just finished watching recently, the whiff of danger, every one of the main characters on that show immediately was worried about their... Well, actually, one wasn't, apparently. Two of the three were worried about their family and had them go into protective custody or disappear. Not apparently Vokoro. But I kept thinking, Will, wouldn't you think that's what he's talking about? I was a little frustrated by that, but again, we'll let it go. It frustrates me when characters who I think are fairly smart aren't sometimes. And then we get the next scene. And I think this was a scene that probably surprised a lot of people. It certainly surprised anyone who was very familiar with the books and the movies and so on. That we see Dalryde outside the house. He's putting in the teeth. He's putting on the mask, which it's a little reminiscent of the first movie, Manhunter, because it's kind of a stocking mask. But because it's dark, it almost looks like it kind of reminded me of Daredevil a little bit, actually. And he's going into Will Graham's house. And I kid you not, I was actually going, wait, this can't be happening now. But yeah, he's going after Will's family. But unfortunately, as quiet as he is, he still made enough noise for Molly and Wally to know something's going on. So she basically does a scene straight out of The Shining with Shelley Duvall trying to get her son to go out a window and run for it. So she does that with her own son. So she tells him, hide by the car, count to 100. If I'm not there at that point, then run. And I thought, that's pretty smart thinking. I never thought of that. Because in movies, they would just have him just wait for me out of the car and then he'd be killed. Anyway, we have this great cross-cutting of Dalryde. He's creeping through the house and the intensity just kept going. And I was really surprised. And actually, I was very tense during the scene. What did you think of this scene?
Yeah, it was the same thing. Just like, we were expecting this to happen in the, at the very earliest next episode or, what more likely the finale. So I was just, shocked. And then once I got over that, I was just, it was well done. It was tense. I didn't know what was going to happen because all of a sudden we didn't know what was going to happen anymore. So it was kind of nice just, having our assumptions challenged, I guess. And then just all of a sudden, all bets were off and it made it probably even more tense having the knowledge going in and just like, okay, anything can happen now.
Right. Yeah.
And it was executed well, so it's nice.
Exactly. And, I've said it at least a million times when we talked about other shows or other things. Like, I don't mind if you diverge from the source material if you do something interesting, if it's entertaining, or if it's logical. And this definitely goes away from the source material, because like you've said, and, you know, semi-spoiler if you haven't read the book or seen at least one of the movies, a confrontation of this nature is supposed to happen towards the end, where it's a big showdown. The fact that this scene happens now makes it extremely unlikely that they're going to do that, because then it would feel kind of like they're repeating themselves to a certain extent, right. I guess. Yeah, so now I'm pretty sure they're not going to do that.
No, that just isn't what they do in this show, so it would be anticlimactic, and they're just
right. Not gonna... Right. But that's it. But going back to what you just said, it did sort of make it exciting, because I realized, oh, they can really change things now. For all, they could even kill them, for all I know. I don't know. It would be horrible, but they could get away with it, because I don't know. But, I thought it was really well done. I thought she did some kind of ingenious things, like making the car alarm go off and going the opposite direction. I also thought when they run out onto the road and... they run and get a car. Of course, unfortunately, the driver jumps out. And he's immediately shot and killed, which is never mentioned again for the rest of the episode. So he's like, he might as well have been a character on 24 getting killed or something. No one seems to care.
It kind of made me just feel just like, oh, Fargo's coming back soon, because that's just exactly the kind of shit that happened in Fargo. It's just complete, you know, some complete rando just gets wasted. Poof.
Right. I also like it's almost like a classic horror movie thing about running onto the road and stopping a car. It was, you know, everything from like Texas Chainsaw Massacre to God knows how many other ones, but it definitely got me going. And of course, in my mind, I was like, you know, if she had just told Will about the dogs, maybe that might have, since Hannibal's words didn't seem to click, maybe that would have made me go, wait, what happened to the dogs? But anyway. So, again, like I said, what's exciting now is I can genuinely say I'm not sure how they're going to end the Red Dragon storyline on this show now, which, again, is exciting, kind of. They've been doing such a great job so far. I'm not expecting to be disappointed by it. I'm just wondering what they're going to do. Where were we? We're at the hospital. So that's where we just find out that Molly... because she gets shot when she's driving away, but not killed, fortunately, because otherwise she would have crashed. But she is in surgery, and Will finds Jack with Walter. Wally, whatever. Well, it's either way his name is right. But he has this conversation with the kid. And Will has to explain to him that, you know, he's not going to kill this guy. They're just going to catch him so they can put him in a mental hospital where he can't hurt anyone ever again. And then... Will finds out that Wally knows about his past from, I guess, a story that had run in Tattle Crime. One of the kids at school had talked to him about or teased him, I don't know. And that apparently Will had killed somebody and he was then put into a mental hospital. I'm assuming they're talking about Hobbs being the person that he had killed or something. Will seems to assume the boy is upset to learn this because, you know, he married his mom. But the way they play it in the TV show, that could be true, but it really seems like the kid's just trying to make a really solid point that Will should just kill the guy as opposed to just catching him. it was an interesting scene. That's actually lifted from the book. And thankfully they didn't do what they did in the book. The book, actually, this is a huge amount of exposition where Will essentially tells him the entire story of Jared Hobbs, which actually I think may be one of the only points in the book where we find out about that. So basically, in the book, he tells him the entire storyline from half of season one in like a page or something. either way, the kid decides he wants to go watch baseball, which... I don't know. Mom might die. I'm going to go watch some baseball. But the only reason I even mentioned this scene is because I like what happens after it. Because Will has his scene with Jack. And he's kind of pissed off at everything. He's pissed off about that article because he had to justify himself to an 11-year-old. And he's pissed off that, you know, at this point, not only his life, but neither Molly or Walter, none of them can ever return home or return to any sense of normalcy until the Red Dragon has been caught. And this is where I think he's getting into the sort of kind of blaming Jack Crawford for this, because, you know, he dragged him in again. But that's kind of the pattern that these two have anyway, so I don't know why yeah. it should really be that much of an issue. And he could have refused them.
And, you know, just thinking about their situation, I mean, it's pretty much as long as Hannibal's alive, I mean, that, you know, that their home is compromised, because, you know, he's super genius, and he knows where they live, so you never know if he's going to do it again. I would not want to be in their situation at all.
Yeah, I would be moving again if I were them.
Yeah.
I'd be looking for another weird house in the woods for you and your dogs. What follows this is a nice little scene, I think, between Alana Bloom and Lecter, because it's Lecter shows his little wise-ass sense of humor, you know, because she's smart. She's figured out that it hasn't been Lecter's lawyer that's been calling him. He just is like, you know, you just could have asked me. But then Jack comes in. At this point, I think it's Lecter himself who points out that the Tooth Fairy that they keep referring to the murderer as has earned the right to be called by his chosen name, the Great Red Dragon. And then we get the line that I was referring to earlier, where Jack says to Lecter, "You have hubbed hell, Dr. Lecter." I was like, what? Hubbed? So I had to think about that. It was like, okay, I know what the word hub means. I just Googled it again just to see if there was some other form of a definition. And I was like, okay, I guess I know what he's kind of saying. He's pretty much, you know, like the hub being at the center of things. So he's kind of saying that Lecter's at, you know, at the center of all this evil right now. But it's just such a weird freaking line. I don't know. I don't think it's in the book. I didn't look that up in the book. I don't know how I would have looked up two words in the book. But his simple cheeky reply is just like, you know, I often do. Now, they seem to believe Lecter's actions are all about him wanting to stay relevant, which is kind of something Chilton said in an earlier episode as well. I don't know. I mean, I guess there is some truth to that, but the way this series has played out, it really always seems to be more about his relationship with Will than it is about practically anything else. So I'm wondering if that's a little bit more at play here than Lecter wanting to, quote-unquote, stay relevant.
Yeah, I think they definitely misread the situation there, because Hannibal's definitely more interested in, you know, fucking with people and fucking with Will than, you know, being, you know, known for having anything to do with this stuff.
Right, exactly. I don't think Hannibal's looking for headlines.
He's not freaking Chilton, so.
Right. And, you know, this is an episode, and if you look at it from beginning to end, it really spins around three different relationships. You've got, you know, Will and Molly. You've got Francis and Reba, which we're going to get to shortly. But the long-term relationship here, the deepest one, and, you know, undoubtedly probably the darkest one, quite frankly, is Will and Hannibal. That's really what the series has kind of been about pretty much since, you know, episode one, season one to now. So, and, you know, like I said, that's why I said earlier, you know, one could easily see that Hannibal's actions is just like the actions of a crazy ex. By the way, again, I hate to get into the whole questioning logic or whatever. Maybe, again, it's something happened off screen that we didn't see. I was kind of wondering how Lecter knew the dragon had failed. Because he's, you know, it's like, how did he know that? He didn't get another call that we know of. How did he know he failed? But in any case, they make it clear the next time that he does call, they want him to keep him on the line so they can complete a trace. Which is, you know, now we're getting into your basic, you know, something we've seen on every single cop show ever.
Yeah.
You know, but at least it's a bit more fun on this one. But, you know, I guess there was no way around that. So speaking of things that are fun, that's a horrible segue because there's nothing fun about the next scene. We see Francis Dollard is standing on his head. And he suddenly gets that maddening whistling in his ear. And we see, almost out of focus, like a momentary, like a flick of a tail. And after he tumbles to the floor, he literally beats himself up. You know, we mostly see just him hurting himself, like punching himself. But every once in a while, there's a little flash little lovely CGI flash of the actual dragon attacking him. So it's a really chilling and weird scene, and really does show you what kind of acting that Richard Armitage is bringing to this role. His physical nature is really selling it really well, I think. After that, we're in Reba's dark room, and that's where the bloody, now bloody and bruised Dolorite is, you know, awaiting her. And we get what I guess is a breakup scene between them. Although he kind of goes from creepy to crying pretty quickly in this scene. But it's interesting because I don't know how else to describe him. There's something almost noble or heroic about the fact he's, well, again, I'll use the word literally, he is literally trying to save her from himself because of what might happen if they stay together. But she, again, is given some really great lines, which make up for some not so great ones earlier in the episode. Like after he says that, you know, he's worried that he's going to hurt her, she undoubtedly thinks he means it in the traditional breakup way, and he has not physically being like hurt her emotionally or something. But then she says to him, it was nice to spend time with someone who has the courage to get his hat or stay as he damn pleased, and gives me credit for the same. Get your hat, Francis. Get it and go. I just love that she would have just a little bit of poetic license with how she basically told him to hit the bricks. The whole thing about get your hat and go. I really like that. I think she's been a great character. So
yeah.
And again, there's an actress who I thought I hated because of True Blood. Huh. This role has proved to me that, I can like her in other things, which is good because I hear she just got added to the cast of Arrow, which is another show I watch. So. Huh. Thank God. Also, I like when he leaves the room, I guess the door is probably closed behind him. There's a little bit of a low growl as he's walking away. Just a little bit of a dragon, which leads to him calling Lecter. And this is where I'm going to call myself out for being an idiot. I did not realize until this episode, until this moment, that he's been calling him from Lecter's place. I don't know why I didn't put that together, even though I should have recognized the layout in previous episodes. It just didn't click. Oh, he's broken into Lecter's house. That's why everything is draped in sheets, because it's his house and there's no one living there. I did not put that together.
Well, yeah, I remember when it happened last week or the week before, whatever, you had said like he broke into Lecter's lawyer's house or office, whatever. I was like, oh, well, you know, because I thought it was Lecter's office, but I was like, oh, maybe I just figured I wasn't paying close enough attention. But...
Well, no, they do a weird thing. They explain later that he's calling from Lecter's house, but also did some fancy techno mumbo jumbo thing to make it look like it was Lecter's lawyer calling via caller ID. So, I guess we see him doing stuff with the wires when he first broke in, and that was how he's able to do that. It's one of those things doesn't require a big explanation, because we'll just accept it on faith that he knows how to.
It doesn't make a lot of sense though, because I mean, if he's just spoofing the lawyer's phone number, I mean, he could do that from any location. It's not like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was one of those things. If Lecter had told him to do that from the outset, then I think it would make sense, because then it would be part of Lecter screwing with everybody, because Lecter would assume that eventually they may start to track this down, and it would, wouldn't it be funny if it was happening from my own house? Yeah. But there was never any indication that there had been any previous contact between them before that phone call. Again, if there had been a personal ad, then it would have made sense.
Yeah, actually, now that you were talking, it kind of makes sense to me now. Maybe it's more of like Dolorite's calling him for therapy, and just, you know, it makes sense to do it from that location because it just, you know, makes sense.
Right, in a more metaphoric way, I guess. Because, it also makes more sense, because now when we see from either of their perspectives, when they're talking to each other, they're in his office, it's either Lecter's memory palace or it's where Dolaheim actually is, so he would be able to imagine the same surroundings. Oh, that actually does work.
Yeah.
It still doesn't work as to why he would choose to do that, really. But again, we let it go. But now back to this phone conversation. And what's very interesting about that, forget the memory palace and forget Francis Dollard's imagination. This is the first time we see a conversation between them, which is your traditional intercutting. It's just one person on the phone, the other person on the phone, back and forth. And I'm pretty sure they did that because we see that Jack and Alana are listening in on the phone conversation. So that's why they do it that way, opposed to being in the same room together. And over the course of the conversation, obviously he's upset after the breakup about Reba, and he's afraid that despite breaking up with her, that she's still going to show up at his house later, and, you know, the dragon may come down and, you know, yada, 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 what might happen. I think there's a moment he actually might even speak in the dragon's voice for a moment.
Yeah.
Tearing her to little pieces or something like that, which is really creepy. But I think he's switching back and forth because then he starts bemoaning about how she called him a man, a sweet man, and he listened to her beating heart. Oh, by the way, I think the significance of the fact that he listened to her beating heart is, again, although it's never been explicitly said on the series, if you've read the book, yada, 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 his previous intimate experiences were with women. They were corpses at this point. So he's probably not used to laying down with a woman who actually has a beating heart. That's what that line is referencing, just to clear that up for folks. But right when he's in the midst of all that, Lecter abruptly warns, like, they're listening. Click. So, you know, then you know, Dolaheim, he hightails it out of the room, and then we get that really nice dissolve between him leaving the room, and then we see, you know, all the little FBI CSI guys are all over the place, including our favorites, Price and Zeller, who have maybe, I don't even know if Scott Thompson has a line at all. I know Aaron Abrams does. I don't think Scott Thompson said anything. Basically, they're there to explain to us what we just said, that Dollard used Lecter's phone, but was able to make it appear that it was his lawyer on caller ID. And that's when Jack fills in what we were just talking about, you know, Hannibal's having his fun. You know, that's what, again, why he would be doing this in the first place. Okay, we'll just let that go. But speaking of fun, I guess Alana's having a little bit of fun keeping her promises, because she proceeds to take everything away from Hannibal. Not just his books, she's taken away his toilet, which does make me wonder what he's going to do as far as bathroom matters are concerned. But I would be remiss for not mentioning what was probably the really big deal here for any longtime fan of Hannibal Lecter, the books, the movies, etc., is that we got to see Hannibal Lecter in the TV version of the iconic face mask, as well as being bound in a straitjacket and restraints. So it's kind of something a lot of people, I'm sure, were waiting for. Once I saw that, I actually had an image already prepared for our podcast, and when we post it, like, on social media, like Twitter or Facebook, whatever. When I saw that moment, like, okay, I gotta find a shot of him in the mask, you know, like, that's got it. and it hadn't been, I don't think it had been posted online previous to the episode, because that would have been kind of like a big spoiler maybe, but luckily I was able to find it pretty quickly afterwards, and that will be the image for our podcast, because, you know, it resembles the mask. It's white like everything else is in things, so it almost has a Jason Voorhees and Friday 13th kind of quality to it as well. But I am glad that they were able to work it in there in a believable way as well. Then we got this, one of the strangest transitions I've seen on Hannibal, because at first I was like, wait, what? We kept seeing a baseball being hit by a bat close. We came out of commercial. I was like, wait, did I fall asleep? Am I watching The Natural? What's happening here? But actually, it's Molly waking up from post-surgery And apparently there's a baseball game on in her room. So I guess in her mind she was imagining the crack of the bat or something. I don't know. It was very strange. But Will is dozing, and we find out that Wally's safe. And more importantly for us, the dogs are safe. Although the dogs are probably all at the vet's office, so of course they're safe from the poisoning. But we find out that she doesn't blame Will. She blames herself because she's the one who urged him to go. And she also blames Jack Crawford. When in doubt, blame Jack Crawford. Pretty much on the show. When she finds out that the attempt on their lives is pretty much due to a suggestion from Hannibal, that she I like that she says it leaves her with a clammy, sick feeling. It's just I like that description, which I did then subsequently find in the book. So I was like, yay, Thomas Harris wrote that line. But after that, we're pretty much getting to the end of the episode, which is our final little scene between Will and Hannibal. And I was talking about how Will keeps getting pissed off in this episode. This is his angriest, probably, and rightfully so, since his family was attacked and he knows Hannibal is behind it. Because he's seething, man, and he has a line where he's sick of dealing with all you crazy sons of bitches. Didn't really seem like something he would say, but it still worked, so I was fine with it. But Lecter does admit that he had told the killer to save himself, kill them all, and then he gave him his home address. By the end of the episode, Hannibal says this is all about craving change, and that this killer, who he doesn't actually know who he is, that the becoming of the Red Dragon means that he can shed all these things that he hates about himself, his appearance, his voice, and so on. He doesn't exactly say that, but when he's describing it, I realize that's what he means, which makes a lot of sense because these are all things that Francis Dolarhyde does hate about himself, is self-conscious about. So his transformation, his mental instability is linked to all that, and it kind of makes sense for me, I guess. Although I wonder if Will really, again, this is dumb Will or smart Will. I think this is dumb Will. If you really what he's saying. Right? He's not looking so much at the killer as his actions. So he says, wait, he didn't murder those families, he changed them? It's like, oh, maybe yes, no, but that's not what really is what he's talking about. But we end with Hannibal telling him, don't you crave change, Will. And then we cut to black and we don't get a scene for the next episode like, we have been not getting for the last few weeks.
Yeah, freaking NBC wants to show us, oh, what was it this time? Heroes? Yay, more Heroes. The groundbreaking show. If it wasn't for Heroes, they wouldn't have shows like Arrow and The Flash. Just know some fuckhead's gonna say that.
Well, they're idiots because they don't know what they're talking about if they say that.
This is true. But yeah, it's like I never watch episode previews, but I've wanted to the last couple weeks, so this storyline must be doing something for me.
Yeah. So, getting back to the episode and how we foresee what's going to happen, I had said earlier that there are things that they've changed from the book. And, obviously, by having the killer, Francis Dolarhyde, confront the family, try to kill them, whatever, at this point, pretty much tells me they're not going to end the story that way as they do in the book. There's a couple other things I'm kind of wondering about. We've only got two more episodes left. There's a couple major things that take up a lot of room and space in the book that they haven't really done much with in the series so far. Now, one thing I don't mind, because I get why they're not. One thing is really getting into Francis Dolarhyde's past, his backstory. That takes up a lot of space in the book. We find that through his childhood, everything he went through. I get the impression there, other than a flash here or a photo there, they're not really going to touch on that much more. I'm fine with that because I think his relationship with Reba and even his therapy sessions, if you want to call them that, with Lecter, have helped to humanize him or at least make him flesh him out more as a character. Because otherwise, my worry would be he'd just be a boogeyman. He'd just be your typical murderer of the week kind of a thing, even though it's been stretched out over 6 weeks. But I'm not minding if they end up not really getting into that stuff. It's fine. The audience doesn't need to know where those teeth came from. I know. People who read the books know. It doesn't matter. I don't care. The thing I'm more curious about, again, people who've either read the book or seen any movie version, is the character of Freddie Lounds kind of plays a really big part in the story. That's the in the books and in the movies, that's the sleazy tabloid reporter who ends up writing all these sensational stories where, and they end up using that character to say these really awful things, awful speculation about the Tooth Fairy murderer. You know, basically implying that he's impotent, that he might be, and all these other things, which I won't even get into on the podcast, which obviously inflames the Francis Dolarhyde to the point where he kidnaps the reporter, does horrible things to the reporter, eventually murdering the reporter in a very, very graphic way.
I can see him doing something like that. I mean, they've definitely kind of set it up, and now that they kind of don't have any leads, so,
I will see. I don't know. I mean, they did make a point of mentioning of having Freddie Lounds show up again, and they've made references to her writing and stories with Lecter or whatever. I'm just they could do it the next episode. It's possible. I don't know. I hope they do. My only thinking of why they wouldn't is the things that he does to the reporter in the book or either movie version is there's a really horrific, violent nature to them. And although obviously he's killing women in these families, I wonder if the fact that Freddie Lounds is a woman is making them kind of go, maybe we don't want to go that far or not. I don't know. This is a show that goes pretty far, but I don't know. Because it's different when it's a character that you've established over the last 3 years. So we'll see. I'd like to see them do it, although part of me, because it will make me cringe, I won't mind if they just decide not to. But it's a major thing that they haven't really, there hasn't really been a hint they're going to do it yet. So maybe we'll see. I can't imagine it'll be in the last episode. So if it's not in the next episode, I don't know when it would be. And that's really all I have to say. I don't have any news about the show. That no good news. At this point, I'm pretty much close to giving up hope that it's going to come back anywhere. Now that Hugh Dancy has been cast in a new show that's going to be on Hulu, I think. I forget what the name of the show is. And although he'd probably have time to do stuff around it, Mads Mikkelsen actually just got cast in one of the upcoming Star Wars movies. So these guys are already, their plates are already starting to fill up with other things to do. So it's just going to become that much more complicated for them to do another Hannibal thing, especially since Brian Fuller is going to go do that other TV show anyway. But, you know.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll do something in a year or two, or yeah, 10, who knows.
Well, the cool thing is, if they chose to, they could, because there is a lot of time between Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs. And quite frankly, it ends up focusing on a different character entirely. So if they want to get away with ending it here, they can do that and it would be fine. It would more end Will Graham's story than Lecter's story, though.
Right.
But I really, again, I think the show is on a roll. I really like this episode. I would probably get, what did I give the last couple? A-minuses. I'd probably give this one an A-minus also.
Yeah.
Very good. And the title of the next episode is finally a title that does not begin with three dots or an ellipse, which is screwing up how we do the titles on our podcast. So we have to leave that out. But I love the title of the next episode. The title is The Number of the Beast is 666. That's the title. I love that. At the tone of the time. And yeah, we've got two more and then it'll all be over and I'll be sad.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess I'll wrap things up here. I feel like we're both probably petering out at this point, so
definitely.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to join the conversation about Hannibal or any of the other dozens of TV shows we're inclined to talk about, you can find us on Facebook at Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. You type in Serious TV Drama, that should be enough to find us there. You can like the page, join the page, and, you know, get in on all the talk about TV and then movies and even pizza from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Or casserole, or whatever you call that shit from Chicago.
Wow, I've never heard you try to butter me. This is very unusual.
It was such an enjoyable episode of Hannibal. I'm just like, I'll do something nice for Scott too.
And I to think the podcast began with me calling you Chicago, which that didn't mean it was a criticism. I was just saying it was to my Chinese daughter. I was likening the two together. you can also find us on iTunes when you put in the search box, put in Serious TV or Serious TV Drama. That should be enough to find our podcast there. You can subscribe to us there. You can rate and review us if you would like to do that. We wouldn't mind getting more subscribers, ratings, or reviews, because all that does is help raise our profile when people search for us for different things. We come up in some searches for certain TV shows. Other TV shows, we don't seem to be able to crack. But hopefully that'll change over the course of the next few months.
Yes.
And that's about it. Anything?
Yeah, not really. I spent like 4 hours cooking this morning for my daughter's birthday, so I really don't have any. I've had enough food on the mind for today. But
What did you cook for your daughter?
I made some, sloppy joes, some kind of scalloped potatoes with rosemary and sage, and then I made some baked beans with that I added a hamburger and bacon and sausage and green peppers, and you don't like peppers, I believe, right? Yeah, but other than that, it's good stuff.
Well, I didn't care for the second half of what you described, but the first half, it would definitely go in under my "that sounds delicious" category.